Thank you. It's nice to have Colin spoke before me because it already laid some of the thing about image processing. So in this presentation, I'm going to briefly introduce a recently developed transform, the Stockwell transform, and then talk about how do we build the various filter to filter out the noise in the particular MRI images. So first of all, because the transform is fairly new, and I'm just going to briefly describe how this transform was developed. And so for that purpose, we have to go through some of the well-known transform, like Fourier transform, Gabor transform, and Wavelet transform. So this may be a review for most of you. So hope you don't mind I'm repeating myself. And then we'll end up, you know, talking about this particular one, Stockwell transform, and then give a brief overview on how the noise was generated in the MR images, and then particularly talking about use this transform to remove motion artifacts and some random noise in the images, and we will conclude. The Fourier transform developed about 200 years ago is well known and is the set up the fundamental for many of image modalities such as the CT and the MR image reconstruction. Actually, I don't understand why we have this black spot there. Anyway, so basically the wavelet transform decomposed a function into sinusoid of different frequencies. So with the wavelet Fourier transform, for instance, suppose we have a piece of music played by a tuba and a flute, and there is some high frequency noise happening in the middle. And applying the Fourier transform to this piece of music, which can give us curve as shown here. From that, we can now the x-axis is the frequency, and now we plot the magnitude of the Fourier spectrum. So from that, we can tell that there's a tuba and a flute played, and there's also some high-frequency noise. However, the Fourier transform tells us what instrument were involved in the play, in the performance, but does not tell us when different instrument come to play. So this is because the sinusoid in the Fourier basis function is not localized in time. So in order to, and we know that most of the signal signal that we received in the reality is the frequency will change over time, and that required a non-stationary signal. So from that, we know the Fourier transform may not be sufficient to analyze a signal whose frequency changes over time. So in order to capture tempo changes in the frequency, Gabor applied to localize a signal with a window function, and then apply the Fourier transform to analyze a small portion of the signal one at a time. So, and then this window function is translated over time. So we can think of the Gabor transform as a localized Fourier transform. So, and the window function, there are infinitely choice for the window function. For example, if we choose the window function as a Gaussian function, which is given as here, here tau represents the time translation of the window function, and the B is a predetermined constant controls the window width. So graphically, this is a cartoon showing graphically how the Gabor transform works. So here is our nice piece of music. And then for a particular time point, we apply a Gaussian window. So anything outside of Gaussian window will be compressed. And then the Fourier transform is applied to this small portion of the signal, and then we get the local frequency content around that time point. So we call this instantaneous frequency. So in the end, and then we can translate this window over every time point, and we get instantaneous frequency for every time point. So in the end, the Gabor transform gives us a function of both time and frequency. So from that, we can tell that the tuba played for the first half of the time and flute played for the second half of the time. And in the middle, around this time point, there are some high frequency happened here. So that's nice. With the Gabor transform, we will be able to tell how frequency, how different frequency event changes over time. However, there's some disadvantages of the Gabor transform. Because we know that once we pick up the window width, then the window width is fixed, which means the entire time and the frequency resolution will be fixed. And from the previous example, we know that if the window width is not small enough, that may not be able to distinguish the occurrence of some frequency event that happens within one window width. For example, here I choose some wider window. From this, it's hard to tell that there's a two occurrence of high frequency noise. And this is because the fixed resolution in the Gabor transform. One may wonder if one can use arbitrarily small window function to do the analysis. In that case, we will have arbitrarily good temporal resolution. However, we can do so, but have to add, we have to pay some, we have to do so with some cost. That means if we have arbitrarily good temporal resolution, the window width is really small, we have to be able to tolerate very bad frequency resolution. And this is because the uncertainty principle in this signal processing that says the multiplication of time resolution and the frequency resolution has to be bounded by bounded below by a constant. So that means we can't get anything free. If we want a better resolution, we will get poor frequency resolution. So this sounds a bad news, but however, in reality, the nature of the most of the signal that we are getting has a long duration of low frequency and short duration of high frequency. That gives us something to bargain. We don't have to have uniform good temporal resolution throughout the whole entire time course. We can adjust our time and the frequency resolution at different frequency level. So that brings us to the multi-resolution analysis in the wavelet transform. So for the wavelet transform, the basis function is not the sinusoid. It becomes a more general basis function, which is simply the scaled and the translated version of the mother wavelet. And usually the mother wavelet will have zero mean and have finite support. So in wavelet transform, the signal is decomposed into the scaled and shifted version of mother wavelet, and this measures the similarity of the signal with the wavelet. And this measurement is represented in the time and the scale domain. The scale factor is roughly related to the inverse of the frequency. For instance, the high scale corresponds to low frequency, and low scale value corresponds to high frequency. So for this wavelet transform, we will have a wider time window used at low frequency and narrower time window used for the high frequency. And this gives us a different strategy of time and the frequency resolution in this analysis. And we know that this is useful because for most of the signal, we will have a long duration of low frequency component. So in that case, the good tempo resolution is not so important. And for the high frequency component in the signal, we know that usually they have short duration. So in order to detect the occurrence of high frequency component, a good tempo resolution seems more important. As we can see that because the wavelet transform gave us a time scale representation of the signal, and the scale factor, usually we cannot find a explicit expression to relate the scale factor directly to the frequency. So this somewhat gave us some difficulty in understanding the time scale representation in the wavelet transform. And here we give us a couple example of the wavelet spectral of the same piece of music that we used in the previous example. Here we choose different model wavelet and we do the wavelet transform and the plot the spectral in the time versus the scale domain. As we can see that depends on the choice of model wavelet, the time scale information could be hard to understand. It really depends how you choose your model wavelet. So this gives us some difficulty to, when we do the signal processing, this gives us some difficulty to decide which one we should choose. So far we have talked about the Gabor transformation, the wavelet transformation. Those are linear time frequency transformation commonly used in the signal and the image processing. So we know that for the Gabor transform, we have a time and a frequency representation. And this is easy because people mostly trained to understanding the Fourier type of frequency. However, the drawback of the Gabor transform is it has a fixed time and frequency resolution that limits the use of the Gabor transform. On the other hand side, the wavelet transform gives us a nice multi-resolution representation of the signal. However, the time versus scale information could somewhat difficult to understand. So wouldn't it be nice if we combine the nice features in each of those transformations and do our analysis? That's exactly what the Stockwell transform is trying to achieve. So so briefly speaking, the Stockwell transform, we can consider that as a combination of Gabor transform and wavelet transform. It combines the time frequency representation of the Gabor transform with the multi-scale resolution in the wavelet transform. So, and this was officially published in 1996 by a group of geophysicists at the University of Western Ontario. So since then, they have done lots of signal processing with the Stockwell transform, and because Lelou is the second author, in this group, and he actually is the father-in-law of my current postdoc supervisor. So as we can see, how this Stockwell transform was. Type of research was performed in the Calgary as well. So this is the East meet West type of stuff. Specifically, the Stockwell transform is defined by this formula. As we can see that similar to the Gabor transform, we have a window function. And this window function is multiplied to the signal. So this signal now is localized and then we apply the Fourier transform. However, unlike the Gabor transform, the window function now in this transform is chosen as a Gaussian function, because there's another theory saying that in the uncertainty principle, it says the product of time resolution and the frequency resolution is bounded below by a constant. However, if we choose the window function as a Gaussian function, and this product will achieve its minimum, so we will get an optimal joint resolution. So that's why they choose the Gaussian function as its window function. And unlike a Gabor transform, where the window width is fixed, for this windowing function, the width of the window function actually is proportionally to the inverse of the frequency. So to illustrate it graphically, we still use our nice piece of music, and then at certain time point, this is at low frequency, we will apply a wider Gaussian window, and then we map the similarity between this piece of signal with the Gaussian modulated sinusoid. And then at higher frequency, we use a narrower Gaussian window and calculate the similarity. And we do that for every frequency and for every time point. So from that, we can tell that we can immediately understand what kind of frequency component that we have in this piece of music. This is a tuba, this is a flute, and this is a high frequency noise. And also, we notice that at low frequency, it gives a better frequency resolution at low frequency because we suffered a poor tempo resolution here. And also, because it gives a better tempo resolution at high frequency, now we can easily tell there are two occurrences of high frequency component. So, and this multi-scale feature is exactly same as the wavelet transform. So another property that the Stockwell transform has is the we can implement the Stockwell transform in the Fourier domain. And we can approve this by the convolution multiplied by a window as a convolution in another in the Fourier domain. And then you apply the translation a little bit algebra. You can prove that the Stockwell spectrum can be calculated in this Fourier domain, where this is the Fourier spectrum of the original signal. And this this equation actually gives us a efficient way to implement the Stockwell transform, because we can utilize the fast Fourier transform. And also tells us, how do we go back and forth between the object space and the Stockwell space. So for instance, suppose we have a signal, we do the Fourier transform to get its Fourier spectrum, and then we do this convolution to get its Stockwell spectrum. So then this tells us, and then we can, to go back to reconstruct the signal, we can simply just collapse all this time information in the Stockwell spectrum, and then do an inverse Fourier transform to reconstruct the original signal. So this is a quite simple process to for the inverse Stockwell transform. And this is a, this property is particularly interesting in terms of noise filtering, because this tells us, giving a measured signal, we can manipulate them in the Stockwell domain, and then doing collapse the tempo information, and then reconstruct the filtered signal. So now we're going to use that to do some noise filtering for the MR images. So this is a brief overview for the magnetic resonance imaging, and short for MRI. So briefly speaking, the MRI can be considered as a signal image processing between the three space, object space, Fourier space, and image space. So as we place the subject in this big machine, this machine works in the way that the Fourier spectrum was collected, the Fourier spectrum of the selected image area is collected in the Fourier space. And then we use inverse Fourier transform to reconstruct the image. Although the MR image looks quite pretty, if we take a closer look at those MR images, we can find lots of defect in the image. For instance, take this image and we blew it up. Not sure if you can really see it. See, for this one, it's supposed to be white matter, so it's supposed to be a homogeneous tissue area. So the signal intensity is supposed to be uniform. But because of the existence of the fluctuation in the hardware, we got some random noise in the white matter area. And also similarly, for the background, there's supposed to be zero signal there, but you know, because of the random noise, we get some random noise in the background as well. So this is the random noise was caused mostly by the eddy currents in the happened in the hardware. And also we have a people in the scanner. So what that means, the people can move. So that created a motion artifact. See, if the people cough or nodding the head, then that could cause some ghost artifact in the image. And also there are some other artifact produced as well by some respiratory or cardiac activities. So in this presentation, we're going to majorly focus on the subject motion artifact and the random noise. So first of all, let's look at some motion artifact using the Stockwell-based filtering. So just going to give you a brief overview of how the functional MRI data, functional MRI works. So we know that MRI is a way to investigate the structures of the brain functions of a human in a non-invasive fashion. In the functional MRI experiment, they usually will simulate the subject with some test, for example, visual simulation test, and that will activate certain part of our brain. And this activation will cause the local blood flow change, increase. And that will cause the local oxygen level increase. And that will, in turn, affect, change the MR signal. And this change usually, this MR signal change usually is quite subtle, around 5% of change. That's something the functional MRI experiment try to detect. So we usually call this this MR signal change dependent on the blood oxygen level. So we usually call it the Bolt signal. Because we are trying to detect 5% signal change, so if we have some significant artifact happened in those images, that may affect the accuracy of functional MRI analysis. So we try to see if the Stockwell transform can help us to reduce some of those artifacts. So we did a typical visual simulation where the subject lay in the scanner and wear a crystal liquid display goggle that connect to a screen of a PC. And then he sees the screen. If the screen shows different picture, for example, in the activation phase, he will see a flashing checkerboard, and that will activate the back part of the visual cortex area. And then following, we can have a static screen that we call it the rest phase. So we designed this experiment where we have a five cycles, 5 30 seconds cycles. So in each cycle, we have a 6 seconds period time that the subject will see a flashing checkbot. So we call it activation phase, and followed by the 24 seconds of rest phase where the subject see a boring static gray screen. And in order to create some a motion artifact, we ask the subject to do to breathe heavily or do a slightly coughing during the second and the fourth cycle, so in order to introduce some intentional motion artifact. And then we collect the images, MR images, over time. So for each pixel in the image, we will have a time course of the image intensity. Then we detect the signal changes of this MR signal. So if the test is perfect, we will see a 5 similar rises and falls like this. However, most of the signal that we are getting is not as nice as this one. So we usually use this as an ideal hemodynamic response function. So this is we use that as a ruler, a model, a standard. Then for each pixel, we will have something similar like this, and we do a cross-correlation analysis to see whether this pixel is activated or not. So if the signal change of this pixel has a greater correlation with respect to the standard hemodynamic response function, we call it activated and then color-coded it. And if the correlation is lower than that threshold, we call the pixel is not activated. So for this experiment, we average all the activated pixel and get an average time course of the both signal. As we can clearly see that during the second and the fourth cycles, there's a big artifact created by the, I think in this case is a heavy breathing. And we can apply the Fourier transform to this time course. So this is a Fourier spectral of this data. We can nicely see the pick out the activated peak and some other respiratory peaks. And also we can see that the artifact created by the motion artifact has a large extent, but it's hard to tell where this artifact exactly are. So we can apply a low pass filter that cut off all this high frequency. However, we know that if we cut off doing a low pass filter that will affect all the pixels, pixels over time. So that's why we want to do filter this data locally. So this is the Stockwell spectral of the same data. As we can see that now we have time and versus frequency. As we can see, we can pick up the activate event pretty well. That is the the line underneath. But what's more importantly, the Stockwell transform be able to identify where those artifact is. So as shown it here, we can clearly see the artifact extent, in the Stockwell spectrum. So after identify the artifact region, we can use simply remove those artifact, and then in order to reconstruct the filter signal, we sum all the Stockwell transform over time, and doing which will give us the filtered Fourier spectrum, as shown in the red curve here. The yellow curve is the original Fourier spectrum. As we can see, by doing the filtering in the Stockwell domain, we suppressed a lot of high-frequency artifact. And also by doing the inverse Fourier transform, we will get the filtered functional data as shown in the red curve. as we can see that the artifact, the heavy breathing artifact, is largely tracked. And also notice that the signal outside of the artifact region is roughly remain the same. So in this illustration, we can see that the Stockwell transform give us a way to locally filtering the artifact in the signal without affecting the signals outside of the artifact region. So this is a nice local filter. And also, as we, this is our early work, and as we go further this year, we find out actually most of the motion artifact will cause a phase shift in the raw data in the MR signal. So instead of doing the filtering for the image intensity, we are thinking we can also do the filtering for the phase. So this is a in order to this is a particularly interesting for the functional MR analysis, because those ghost artifact in the image may give us a false positive or false negative in the functional MR analysis. False positive means the pixel is actually not activated because of the artifact exists in the image, so that will consider as activated pixel in the functional MR analysis. And also false positive means this pixel is the false negative means that this pixel actually is being activated by the experiment, and because of the existence of artifact, is not identified as activated pixel in the functional MR analysis. We try to reduce this number of false positives and false negatives in the functional MR experiment so that we can get an accurate brain activity activation map. So this is just to illustrate that we did some simulation tests just to see how effective the Stockwell-based filtering is. So we generated 529 simulated hemodynamic response for the same visual stimulation test. And this is one of them, where we add some, first of all, we have a perfect, perfect hemodynamic response from the experiment. Then we add some random noise in order to mimic the real human dynamic response. Then we add some high frequency noise at the second and the fourth cycles. And then we apply the Stockwell transform to this time course. We can clearly pick up the artifact created by the high frequency artifact, high frequency noise. And then we remove, we look at them, and for each frequency, we calculate the mean, the median value of the phase. And then if for this particular point, the phase magnitude is three times greater than the median value, we consider that as the artifact. So we remove them and replace them by the median value. So that is the corrected Stockwell spectrum. And then we do the inverse Stockwell transform to get the reconstructed data. So as we can see, the high frequency noise has been efficiently removed by doing this filter. Then we did the same thing for all the 529 simulated data, and we plotted the cross correlation, the distribution of each filtered data with the standard ideal hemodynamic response function and calculate the correlation. So this is the original data where we only add some random noise. So the correlation of this one with the standard hemodynamic response is pretty high. And this one is the distribution of those number of tests for after we add the high frequency noise. As we can see that the correlation is quite low after we add the artifact. And this is the one that after we did the Fourier low-pass filter, and we see that the correlation increased a little bit, but not that much. And this is the distribution for the ST filtered data. And we can see that there is a significant increase of the correlation between the filtered data with the standard hemodynamic response function. So this shows that the ST transform has the potential to give us a better accuracy for the functional MRI activation map. So then we stick, this is the shows where we stick this ST filter in the standard functional MRI data post-processing. So we stick this right after here. So we get the raw data, and we get the phase information from the raw data, and we do that over time. So we have a phase time course. So we collect the phase for each frequency and see how this phase changes, the phase in magnitude change over time. So we get a time course of the phase. Then we apply the Stockwell transform to get the to manipulate the information in the Stockwell domain, and we identify the artifact region by calculate the median value. And if the phase intensity is greater than 3 times the median, then we remove them and place by the median value, and then do the inverse Stockwell transform to get the raw data and to get the corrected phase, and then finally construct the image. So here are some examples. So this is a before filter, and this is after filter. As we can see that for the thin voxel, this is a before filter. The MR signal intensity is as shown in the white curve. And this one is after filter. The signal intensity is shown as a pink curve. And this is a phase correction. This is for one particular phase time course. This is a before filtering, and this is the pink one is after filtering. We can see that the Stockwell-based filter effectively removed the artifact in this subject. I think the subject is doing the coughing and the breathing too. And then we did calculate the brain activation map before the without ST filtering and with the ST filtering. For that, we can see that for some pixel that is originally in the activation map, for example, this one is being removed after the ST filter. So this looks like it's being activated before filtering. And after filtering, it shows that it's actually not activated. And this is the curve shown in B. The white one is the before filtering, and the pink one is after filtering. It shows that this pixel actually is not being activated. And also there is a pixel that originally does not show being activated in the activation map. But after the filtering, it shows that the pixel actually is being activated. So this pixel is shown, the graph is here, that the white curve is the before filtering, that because of the existence of the artifact, the correlation of this white curve with the standard hemodynamic response is low. But after filtering, the pink curve, this is after filtered after filtering, the pink curve actually has a higher higher correlation with the standard hemodynamic function. So this shows that the Stockwell transform actually works well for the pixels that are around the threshold. And we also know that besides the motion artifact created by the subject, there are also some random noise exist in the MR images. And because the functional MRI is trying to detect a 5% of the signal change, so although those random noise usually is 2% or a very low percentage. But because of the existence of a random noise, that can affect the accuracy of functional MRI analysis too. So in this case, we try to study whether the ST can help us to remove some random noise. So in order to study that, I'm going to introduce a parameter, signal-to-noise ratio. This is a common parameter that to measure the that is commonly used to measure the image quality. So as it says, the signal-to-noise ratio usually is defined by the signal magnitude, the signal amplitude divided by the standard noise, standard deviation of the noise. And we usually do it locally, choose a region of interest in the signal region, and place the same region of interest in the background, in the noise region. And then we calculate the signal amplitude in this signal region, and calculate the standard deviation of the noise in the noise region, and calculate this ratio. So this is one way to calculate it. And the other way to calculate it is just to calculate the standard deviation of the signal and then calculate the standard deviation of the noise, then calculate this ratio. So this is could be considered as a local calculation of signal-to-noise ratio, and this is a kind of global calculation. And of course, in most of cases, we prefer high signal-to-noise ratio because that means the image quality is high. Okay, and this is then we model the measured signal or measured image by this simple linear model, where the measured image is the addition of the true signal plus some random noise. And here we assume that the true signal and the noise is independent, does not have any correlation. And also the noise we usually consider as zero mean Gaussian noise. And the Wiener filter is a filter that provides an optimal approximation to the true signal in the sense that it minimizes the least square error between the approximation and the true signal. And the approximation, the approximated signal can be expressed by the measured signal convolving with a time-invariant filter, and namely Wiener filter. And we know that a convolution in one domain is a multiplication in another domain. So the Fourier response of the approximate signal can be written as the Fourier response of the filter times the Fourier spectral of the measured signal. And we can prove that the Fourier spectral of the Wiener filter can be expressed in this formula, where P is the power spectral of the true signal, and P sub n is the power spectral of the noise. Basically, this equation says that the Wiener filter will try to keep the frequency band where the signal is greater than the noise, and try to suppress the frequencies where the signal is low, but the noise is high. So this is what the Wiener filter trying to do, try to keep the frequency band where the signal is greater. However, similar to the Fourier transform, the Wiener filter is stationary. That means the filter does not change over time. And the same filter applied to the entire signal. And we know that because of the variations of signal, most of the signal has some behave differently over time. So this in time invariant filter could be a problem. So one way to do that is to let the filter changes over time, and so that we try to do a local filtering around different time, around a neighborhood of a time point. And this has been done by different, has been implemented by different transforms. For example, as a Gabor transform, as we all know that they are, because of the fixed resolution of a Gabor transform, this has a limited application of that. And most of the adapted Wiener filter is implemented in the wavelet domain. And however, we know that because the wavelet deal with the time versus scale, so the scale is not exactly corresponding to the frequency. So the resolution, the scale resolution may not be exactly the frequency resolution that we are looking at. So we propose to implement the Wiener filter in the Stockwell domain. So here we written everything, the power spectrum. Now we define a local power spectrum defined by the Stockwell transform. And the approximate signal can be written by this formula, where this is the filtered Stockwell transform of the measured signal. And then we sum over to get the Fourier spectrum, filtered Fourier spectrum, and to get the approximated spectrum, approximated signal. And what's more interesting is take a closer look at this equation. This is the integration with respect to different variable. If we switch the variable, switch the tau and the decay, we get this formula here. So take a closer look at this formula underneath, that tau, where in this integration, tau is fixed. So what we have is the local Fourier spectrum of the Wiener filter applied to the localized measured signal, and then do the inverse Fourier transform. So this tells that the Stockwell Wiener filter actually is a localized Wiener filter, because this tells that a filter is applied to a local spectrum at a time tau. And then here are some simulated. This work is still ongoing. It's just a couple months. And this is some simulated data. The black line underneath is the true signal. And then we add some random noise on the top, so that is shown as the brown line. And then we use the Wiener filter, and the blue line is the Wiener filter signal, and the red line is the Stockwell Wiener filter signal. As we can clearly see that the Stockwell filter signal does perform quite well over here, where the Wiener filter still has some oscillation, although it already has the increase in the signal-to-noise ratio. But overall, the ST-based Wiener filter performance much better than the Wiener filter. And this is not surprising, because we locally Wiener filter the signal. And this is another example, as the signal-to-noise ratio decreases. And again, this one is performance better than the Wiener filter alone. And then this is with the signal-to-noise ratio is 1. That is pretty bad. This signal is pretty badly crafted by the noise. However, the ST can recover the signal reasonably well. And we can also extend this filter into a 2D case. In that case, we try to remove the random noise in an image. So in this case, this is one example from this 2D filter, where we have a noise-free image, and then we add some random noise, so the signal-to-noise ratio is about 13. And we do the Wiener filter and do the ST Wiener filter, as we can see that the ST Wiener filter has a much higher signal-to-noise ratio than the Wiener filter. And this is another extreme example, where the signal-to-noise ratio is almost 1. However, the ST Wiener filter almost triple the original signal-to-noise ratio. So in conclusion, we have introduced the Stockwell transform, which is basically a combination of a Gabor and wavelet transform. We also illustrated the removal of motion artifact and the random noise using the ST-based adaptive filter. However, we have to be fair to say that we are not saying the ST-based winner filter, ST-based filter is the best. There is no best filter after all. It really depends on the individual applications and also the wavelet-based filter, because usually it's faster because of the existence of discrete wavelet transform. However, depends on the nature of the signal. Sometimes the ST-based filter performs better, and sometimes the wavelet filter performs better. So there's a lot of future work that we need to do in order to validate the clinical value of those filters, and also in order to design a better filter fit to individual applications. Thank you.